You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barrichini, and Alex Hopton.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to episode 157 of Sticks in the Six. Here on game day of game three of their first round series against the horrible Boston Bruins. Here, obviously, with Peter and Alex, myself, Andrew, brought to you by the fine folks at the Hockey Podcast Network and Indie Ale House. And boys, lots to talk about game one and two. We will take a look at recapping those, as well as talking about some maybe not invisible, but some questionable efforts from players so far this series, as well as what the heck's happening with William Nylander. But before we get into all of that stuff, Alex, how you doing this week, my friend?
We're doing well over here at Camp Hobson, brother. We're it's been a pretty when was the last time we recorded? It was probably last week before game one. See, I have a goldfish brain. I can barely remember where I've been. Yeah, it's been a good week though. Had a complete ball hockey grind over the weekend. I don't know what the schedule makers were thinking. I know that Jim Montgomery's not happy with the scheduling and the way the fact that they have to be in Toronto for a measly extra day.
They took note from the NHL. That's what they did.
Yeah, buddy should try playing in my ball hockey league. They scheduled us for a game on Friday night, Saturday night, and Monday night. It's like, dude, give us, and then now we don't have another game until next Friday. It's like, come on, man. You can't just give us three games in four nights and then give us like a 2 week break.
He's complaining about a one game break in between everything else.
Oh no, like, Jim, you have to spend an extra day in Toronto. No.
Yeah, I'm sure the players. Hey, what's
wrong
that.
I kind of take offense to that. What's wrong with Toronto?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, go to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Go to Nathan Phillips Square. Go get some street meat outside of the Rogers Center. Come on. Like,
go visit Peter on your day off. Let's go.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah. Go visit Peter at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Things have been doing good, boys. This is the time of year where my mood changes like probably every half hour, depending on how I'm feeling. I was just thinking yesterday how great it felt to be coming off a win from game two. And going into a day where you can watch a Jays game, and then there's also more playoff hockey going on you can watch as a neutral party. It's so nice to be able to be in that position, especially when your team just won a game. When your team's coming off a loss, it's brutal. I hate it. But one way or another, I've been my mood's been all over the place for the past week or so, and that's not going to change until the Leafs are eliminated, whenever that might be. But hopefully I get to keep up this insanity run for a couple of months and not just another week.
There you go. Peter, how are you doing this week, my friend?
Doing good. Yeah, kind of riding the same high as Alex right now. You know, playoff hockey is playoff hockey. And that's another thing Jim Montgomery should do. Get a ticket to the Jays and Dodgers so he could probably boo Shohei Ohtani and get his frustration out there.
Maybe just lay a suggestion, few bets. Maybe lay a few bets on the Dodgers.
Very fitting, but yeah. Yeah, no, doing great. You know, lots to talk about right now. And I'm going to go back to something that you posted in our chat forums with our predictions on Instagram. Obviously, like, for a little backdrop or reference or whatever, I picked Boston in six. I said it last week, made the pick, and I was hoping to do a little reverse psychology, and apparently I should probably be suspended from the first round as a result of that. Sorry if I didn't quite get the memo. If you need me to leave, I'm happy to leave. But yeah, you know, it may have worked. It may have worked, and I hope it continues to work, my idea of that reverse psychology thing. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, we had a listener comment saying that we need to hand Peter a first round sussy for his pick of the Boston Bruins to win the first round. But yeah, it's definitely been a fun first round to watch overall so far. Very. Obviously, the Colorado Winnipeg series is off to a hot start. Big news out of the Florida series with Sam Bennett likely out long term. So that'll be interesting, especially if Florida continues to push the seal in this first round against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Thatcher Demko, another injury that happened in the Vancouver series, and that obviously cost them last night. Yeah, we're here to talk about the Maple Leafs. We're here to talk about the Boston Bruins. We're here to talk about Jim Montgomery and his hate for staying one extra night in Toronto, which we will obviously get to in a little bit here. But we gotta recap games one and two, boys. Obviously, game one, 5-1 loss. Game two, they come back and they sneak one out 3-2 with that Austin Matthews breakaway goal, which was just filthy. And realistically, when you look at it, from a team standpoint, neither game was a horribly played game by the Toronto Maple Leafs. In fact, game one, aside from the 5-1 score and maybe some questionable defensive plays within their own zone, it wasn't a terrible game for the Leafs. It looked a lot worse on the scoreboard. Peter, I'm going to throw it to you. Let's recap one and two together. They go from a 5-1 loss to really shutting things down in game two. What were your takeaways from the first two games of this series?
Yeah, like you said, it wasn't like an awful, awful effort from like puck drop to the end, because in the first 3 minutes, it was actually, you know, advantage Toronto. They had a lead of shots at like 4-0 at that point. And then all of a sudden, bad pinch, or not necessarily a bad pinch, but a bad decision by Reese when I believe it was Edmondson was already pinching up. Reese makes a hit, and then at least a 2-on-1. Bad decision there. And then kind of spiraled down for the Maple Leafs, where it was kind of back and forth for a little while. Toronto wasn't fully out of it, but Swayman was on top of his game. You got to give him credit for making the stops that he needed to make. There's also the fact that, you know, the special teams game, that was absolutely lost for the Maple Leafs. Like, the penalty kill was absolutely dreadful, but those mistakes on the penalty kill compounded that together with the few mistakes made at 5-on-5. It was just a bad situation overall. And when you're like, you know, Tyler Bertuzzi, Max Domi, you can't be taking dumb penalties like that, you know, slashing on the wrist or whatever. But I do feel that, you know, they learned their lesson, because game two was kind of the same thing. Toronto got off to a good start. Boston scored. Power penalty kill still awful, but they clawed their way back. And that was the main thing. They showed that resolve, that mentality, that work ethic and drive to still come back and win it, just kind of like they did last year against Tampa Bay. I mean, it wasn't like game one was a blowout and then Toronto blew out Tampa Bay. Close game, but, you know, it was essentially the Austin Matthews show that game. He basically took charge from beginning to end, assisting on Domi's goal, assisting on Tavares' goal, having that beautiful breakaway, like catch and receive from that midair pass from Domi. Shout out to Domi, by the way, because that was absolutely filthy itself. We talk about the goal, but that pass from Domi was electric himself. And even Samsonov, too. He could have gotten down on himself very early on after the first goal, even the second one, when, again, complete breakdown of 5-on-5 off the faceoff. Toronto gets back into it in the second period. So Sammy still stood on his head, making big saves when he needed to, including the dying seconds as well. The big thing is just you got to tighten up a little bit. I wrote a piece about that. Maybe some people didn't like it because it was still a relatively good game, close games in game one and two. The little details matter, and it mattered on that Pastrnak goal. You can't keep giving Boston that opportunity or those chances. Otherwise, they are going to make you pay, because they do have stellar goaltending. If they could tighten up just a little bit, be a little bit more disciplined, it could come out to work their advantage in the long run, especially when heading into game three as well, because it worked out in game two, kind of got away a bit away from them later on, but you have to like the response and they got to feel good going back to Toronto.
Absolutely. And quite the way you want to go back, you know, tied 1-1 in the series, you've stolen home ice advantage. Alex, your thoughts on game one and two and how the Leafs were able to bounce back and really shut things down in that second game.
So I know that, you know, when you're in a situation like the Leafs and you've got all these constant expectations and, you know, it's almost like you're feeling the heat a little more from the fans and just from the pressure from the media and all that. It's just, it's one of those things where there's a whole bunch of pressure. And, you know, I understand that Leaf fans, especially in the playoffs, they operate on a very kind of knee-jerk basis where there's an article from the Beaverton going around yesterday, which I kind of laughed at because it's not satire. The Beaverton satire, this was not satire. It's like
Leafs, it was truth. It was
Leafs truth. Leafs fan who firmly believed the team was getting swept, now equally as confident that they're going to win the cup, which, yeah, I mean,
true.
It's true. That's how Leaf fans operate. So there was no results like it, other than a win in some shape or form that would have made fans happy after game one. And I think a lot of it was blown out of proportion right off the bat. Like there were a lot of stuff and, you know, obviously I'm not justifying any of this, but there was a lot of stuff about, oh, the Stars didn't show up that day. There was no Matthews, no Marner. They got smothered, et cetera, et cetera. From watching the game, I didn't think that the game was as bad as the score suggested. I thought that it was a matter of two things: stupid, timely penalties, and Samsonov just not being as good as Swayman in that game. That's really all there was to it. Because, you know, there were a couple of points in that game where the momentum shifted just from one play. There was obviously right at the start of the game, I was listening on the radio, the Leafs were hemming the Bruins in their own zone. They were coming out and setting the tone physically and all this. And they end up giving up that 2-on-1, like you said. And then right off the bat, now you're chasing the lead. Mm-hmm. And then later on in the game, you've got the errant stick, high-sticking penalties that Tyler Bertuzzi and Austin Matthews both took. The Matthews one specifically was bad because he went into the box and Bruins made it 3-0 on the power play almost instantly. And then there was that other thing you were talking about before we went to air here about the open net that Matthews had. We wired it off the post.
Yeah.
There were a number of turning points in that game. And then Max Domi again when he slashed Brad Marchand and he got shot and fell to the ground, and hopefully he's doing okay, recovering in hospital right now from that egregious slash. That was one way or another, whether you think it was a slash or a dive or not on Marchand's part, it was a stupid penalty for Domi to take. And he ended up going into the, yeah, it was both. Yeah. He went into the box and the Bruins once again extended the lead. So, I mean, there were some concerns to take out of that game. Special teams weren't great, but they were better in game two. I thought the penalty kill did a great job at locking down the Bruins, especially late in the game. They obviously tied the game on the power play, so the special teams were better in game two. And I just felt like they focused on their game a little more than just going out and trying to hit everything possible. And for what it's worth, they still don't look scared of Boston, which I think is a massive improvement and a great place to start compared to previous years, because you know they're going to be a tough out, but you can't be punching up to them and also not holding up physically, because we've seen that what happens when a Leafs team does that against Boston in the past, and it never ends up well for them. So I thought that the turnaround into game two was great. I didn't think game one was really as bad as people made it out to be. I think it was just a number of stupid instances in the game, bad penalties, soft goals, like Samsonov just not allowing shots at the same pace of Swayman early on. I thought that outside of that, you know, they outshot Boston that game. They were, I think they out-hit them by one hit. So they did a lot of good things in game one, but they needed to come back with a better effort in game two, and that's what they did. So I'm feeling pretty optimistic. Might shoot myself later for saying that, but I'm feeling pretty optimistic about where they're at right now, specifically.
Yeah, I mean, altogether, guys, you mentioned the first game was not as bad as people made it out to be. I think it was just the overreaction of Leafs Nation, and we're all kind of used to seeing that. You know, 5-1, it's pure panic. Here we go again. Recycle, reuse, the same storyline that we're all used to. And that's kind of where that came from. But game two, they definitely bounced back. And, and they were a little bit more disciplined, albeit, you know, there was still some feistiness, and you have to have that, especially against the Bruins. And, you know, if it comes to this against the Lightning or Panthers in round two. But I do think I want to go back to what you mentioned about Marshawn. Did anybody else, like, I didn't see it until I saw it on social media afterwards about Bertuzzi's hack in game two on his leg, and he went down grabbing the other leg. Did you guys notice that at all?
It looked like he got hit on the right and then grabbed his leg, like, you know, a soccer player grabbing his arm when, you know, someone kicked him in his foot.
And I mean, anybody who's played hockey has at
like some that was point, a massive sale job.
Yeah, anybody who's played hockey at some point has taken a two hand to the back of the leg. I mean, it's kind of like a coming of age in hockey. Like, you need to take a two hand to the back of the leg, and that looked honestly like a love tap more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, we weren't on the ice, we didn't see it, so we can't really comment on that. But my brother actually sent me a text as soon as he went down. He said, Marshawn just killed his legacy with that dive. This isn't soccer. Disgraceful. And then he wrote, hashtag, this ain't soccer. Hashtag, George Parros. Hashtag, if you don't knows, spelt N-O-S-E, now you knows. Obviously making fun of Brad Marchand's rat-like nose. But it's definitely fun to see. It's almost like he's squirming a little bit. He's trying to find a way, one, to get underneath the Leafs' skin, but two, how can I benefit my team because my offense hasn't been there? And I don't know if you guys saw the stat in game one about the power plays, and I think Marchand had gone 40 games without a power play goal, and Pasternak was 20-something games without a power play goal, which was absurd to me. Like, it wasn't even something that, you know, I would have considered. But it's interesting to note that he almost seems like he's scrambling a little bit. I don't know if you guys get the same feeling, but that's just the way that I've watched his play so far. But yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see what transpires tonight. Obviously, the physicality's up. Obviously, the rivalry's still there. The Leafs need to play a similar game to game two if they want to get game three and maintain home ice advantage. But Alex, I want to throw right back to you about Matthews. Obviously, he scored that go ahead goal in game two. A beautiful backhand on the breakaway. He has been kind of all over the place in this series, and maybe the offense wasn't there in game one, but certainly in game two, 8 shots on goal, just peppering the Bruins with whatever he could. And eventually, obviously, gets that goal to put them ahead late in the third and come out victorious. What are your takes on Austin Matthews so far in this series?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that he did get shut down in game one, but he was called upon to come out and do something and put the team on his back, and he did exactly that. Like, he had a say in all 3 goals. He got 2 assists on each of the first 2 goals, and then he obviously scored the goal to win the game with 6 minutes left or whatever it was. So you can't say that Matthews didn't show up in that game. He showed up, and he came to silence the doubters and did what we all know that he can. Excuse me. God, sorry. Kicking back an apple bubbly again. I'm still on my kick. But Matthews is, you know, we know that he has the ability to take a game and put the team on his back and kind of take control of a game single-handedly. So I think that so long as he keeps doing this, and it doesn't have to be a 3-point night every night, like, as long as he's coming out and making an impact in a positive way and making an impact on the power play and on the penalty kill, and not on the penalty kill necessarily, but making an impact in the areas that we know he can make an impact in, I think they'll be much better off in the series. And that game too is obviously just a look at what he can do when he's at the top of his game. And I think that in recent years, I said this last time we recorded, he's done a good job of kind of shedding that doesn't show up in the playoffs notion, because he hasn't scored any massive game winners outside of that one and the game 5 game winner 2 years ago against Tampa Bay. But, you know, he does contribute. He plays solid defense. He scored the 2 goals in game 4 to start the comeback against Tampa Bay, scored the opening goal against Tampa in game six last year. Like he's scoring goals. He's making his name in these goal in these games. I think just he needs to be kind of what McDavid is for Edmonton in the playoffs and what McKinnon is for the Avalanche in the playoffs. He just needs to be the guy that can show up and can take control of the game. And if he does that on a somewhat regular basis and saves his goals for when the team needs it the most, I think that they'll be off the races.
Guys, just for full transparency, because you're going to see me looking off the screen, you're going to hear little giggles from like a one-year-old, and you're going to hear probably screams at some point in this episode. But this is what I've got going on beside me. So this is Oakley. He's built himself a fort with his iPad. Okay. He's got the helmet on.
Everything. He's all set.
He's ready to go. He's ready to go. And then this is the invasion of the little sister. So if anybody's wondering what's going on in the background, that's exactly what's going on in the background.
I love
so
it. That's why I before and after
trying to get a little bit of silence, but try telling an 18-month-old that you need a little bit of quiet. It's not going to happen. So anyways, Peter, your thoughts on Austin Matthews and what he's provided for the Maple Leafs through the first two games, seeing as, you know, obviously not much going on in game one, 3 points in game two.
Yeah. And I think obviously game one was not the desired result, but you saw like glimpses of what each line did. I think aside from the fourth line, the top line was the only one that, you know, tried to generate a whole lot. And this is what we were talking about, having that balanced attack where you have Burton Domi being those aggressors, being in on the forecheck and being those guys that can dig for loose pucks and being, you know, critical factors to Matthew's side. That is important. And it looked and it worked out very well. It seemed like Boston didn't have a response every single time that line was on the ice because they were always in the offensive zone, which is what you want to do. And yeah, for Matthews overall, he had a good game in game one, but, you know, everyone's going to look at the stat sheet and be like, oh, you know, he didn't get anything, but you know what? That was to be expected. If he's still having that impact, that's what you at least want to see. He was out. Yeah, it was good. There was bound to be a point where he would break out, and game two was that moment. Just like last season or last year against Tampa Bay, you know, bad game one. I think he had a couple points in game two, didn't score, but it was like, you know, games three, four, five, and six. That's when he was at his best. I believe I can't remember if it was game three or game four where they were down two goals. He got them back with the two. Ryan O'Reilly got the game tying goal. And then I think Morgan Riley won it in overtime. I think that was probably game three. Game four was a Kerfoot one, but either way, Matthew showed up in a big moment in that series. This game two was similar to that in that he showed up in a big moment. And when you're getting paid that kind of money, a lot of attention, a lot of pressure is going to be on you, but he was not fazed by that at all. He was dominant in game one, didn't get the results that he wanted, but he kept pressing with that line. In game two, they got the desired results with, you know, the Domi goal, the game tying goal for Tavares on the power play, and even that game winning goal. You know, it just seemed like at one point Matthews was going to score, and it had to be in that moment, and he had to be the one to push them to victory. And ultimately, that was the deciding factor. And if you have to feel that, I think even after the game where they're showing the blueprint and they're putting the puck in the thing, Tavares gave Matthews the puck and he's just like, let's keep it going. You know, that's what you want to see. That momentum is on their side right now because, like you said, Boston is trying to have it a hard time figure out how to get under Toronto's skin, especially Marchand. Toronto isn't being fazed by that. They weren't that much fazed at all in game two. They need to keep that composure in game three, and with home ice on your side right now, that is big, because if they were down 0-2 and Matthews didn't score that goal, it went into overtime and there was probably a different result. You're 0-2 in your home barn, and that's a bit of an issue when you're down 2-0. Things get a little dicey. So they needed to come away with that hypothetical kind of win it all game seven type of mentality in that game, because now momentum shifts to them. And it was not like it was a blowout win, kind of like Boston and 5-1 in game one. It was a close one. It was one of those grinded out games that the Maple Leafs needed to have. And those are the type of playoff wins that build that kind of character. I know we said it last season against Tampa Bay. We said it against Florida in that last game as well, but that was a different story. But if they're able to do that and keep pressing against a tough opponent like Boston, good things are going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the demon, right? This is the slaying of the demon that we've waited for a number of years. And You know, it's not even close to being done yet. I truly believe, I think most of us said that it was going to go six or seven games. I truly believe it's going to go the length. So it's definitely a team. It's going to take a team effort to take down the Bruins, as much as they miss guys like Bergeron and Krejci. We talked about it, you know, last week. It's a team that still has that winning pedigree. They still have the guys that have been there through it. Matt Grizzlick is an underrated guy that they have. Brad Marchand. So to have a guy like Matthews come out and basically he carried the Leafs a little bit in game two offensively when it came to chances and expected goals for and just making sure that he could get stuff done for the Maple Leafs. It was huge for them to get, you know, to get the effort they did from him in game two. Quick shout out to longtime listener Cody Bissell. Good afternoon, Cody. Hopefully you're ready for game three tonight, wearing that blue and white. Hopefully we can get another W for you as well. We talked about it a little bit before we hit the record button here. Steve Simmons had an article come out in the whatever you want to call it, the rag paper of the Toronto Sun. And basically said that Mitch Marner has been invisible in this series. Offensively, I don't think there's any question. There's been, you know, moments where, you know, you've seen his ability to possess the puck. At the same time, you've seen moments where you would expect the Mitch Marner of the regular season to create some sort of offensive opportunity. That said, we have not seen that from Mitch Marner. We've seen past playoff performances where he hasn't performed well. Peter, what's your take on Mitch Marner? Are we talking about an invisible player or what's going on with Mitch Marner?
I mean, we all know the headlines that Steve Simmons makes. I mean, I'm not going to talk about it. I didn't even bother reading it because it just seems like it's not even worth the time. But that being said, you can have constructive criticism about Mitch Marner's game, but not cross the line as what we saw. I mean, to say that he's been fully invisible, I do not agree with that at all. Like Andrew said, there has been moments. He has shown some glimpses of that puck possession style, but there are instances where that physicality and lack thereof tends to get the best of him. And we saw it on that play where he's going in after Charlie McAvoy, and instead of like getting the inside edge, he goes around him to try and get the puck and easily gives McAvoy the opportunity to regain possession. That's not the Mitch Marner play that we know, or that's not the style of play that he plays with. Like, we know how well he can play. We know that when he takes control of a shift and when he plays with that mindset and that intensity, he's basically a possession demon. You cannot stop him. But there are instances where that, you know, that physicality and that ability where sometimes he's under pressure, that does get the best of him. So he may need to clean that up, but also he hasn't really taken charge of a game, kind of like what Matthews did. Tavares, even in that game, tying that game up. Tavares in game six last season, scoring the overtime winner. It seems like William Nylander has had his moments as a star player, even when Matthews and Marner go cold. Marner really hasn't had that kind of moment just yet, and he has been a very good producer in the postseason. I mean, I think he's like at 47-52, but considering what he's making with his current contract, you expect a little bit more out of him because he's making close to $11 million. Even look at his underlying numbers. They're pretty decent at 5-on-5. I mean, he was on for that goal against in game two, that one where everyone was just all over the place, but scoring chances for him when he's on the ice, 60.87, you know, shots for 63-16. He does have an impact. It's just a matter of him elevating it and taking it to that next level, because it seems like, you know, we're probably not going to have a Connor McDavid like game where he has five assists in one game, but you see David Pastrnak take over when he can. You see players like Kucherov, Point, Stamkos take over, Tkachuk, Reinhart, Barkov take over a shift every now and then. Marner just needs to do that consistently. I don't agree that he's fully invisible. He is there when he has the puck, sometimes not, and then he can make a bad decision, but he needs to be consistent in trying to find that game where he does take charge.
Yeah, I mean, I think people forget just how useful he has been in the playoffs when it comes to, you know, offensive production, points per game, everything like that. But in saying that, you do want to see a game where he can come out and maybe get a couple primary assists, create some opportunities, and be that playmaker that we're so used to seeing. It's not that he's incapable of being a playoff performer. I mean, here in London, he was the MVP. He was incredible. Like, he was able to help them to a Memorial Cup in the playoffs. Like, that's so to say that he's not a playoff performer. That's one of the conversations I've had with a number of people, is they don't believe that he's made for or built for the playoffs. But
and another point too, Keith said that, you know, that second line, they were hemmed in when they're up against David Pastrnak, and he's a tough player to go up against. So if you could just limit him to just only one goal in two games, that I do agree that isn't a win. But if Pastrnak is able to take over a shift, Marner needs to continue doing that too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, Alex, I want to get your take on I mean, not necessarily the Steve Simmons article, but the fact that there is this conversation of Marner being invisible through, I mean, and let's get this straight. It's through two games of this playoff series.
Yeah, you know what? It's fair to say he's been invisible offensively, but a lot of people who are criticizing his inability to show up and all this, like, are overlooking the fact that he was on the ice for much of those last 5 minutes and shutting down the Bruins and keeping them off the score sheet. And I don't know about you guys, the Leafs did not make me sweat whatsoever in those last 5 minutes. Like, they weren't letting Boston get any premier opportunities. They were clearing the puck. They were doing everything they could to kill time. Like, that's, like, I understand that you know, you see Marner set all these point records, but you see him go off and put up 90 to 100 points every year. You see him go on these torrid streaks where he's got, like, feels like 50 points in 30 games or something like that. I think that's how he finished last year. I understand that everybody wants Mitch Marner to, you know, be like McDavid, in the sense where his name is always all over the stat sheet. But the reason this guy got paid almost $11 million is because of his ability to put up those points and play shutdown defense. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say he's been good enough offensively, because he hasn't. And it's going to be a bad look if the Leafs come out of this series and they lose to Boston in seven games or whatever, and Marner's got like 4 points during it. It's not going to be a good look. We've saw it already with the Montreal series. He had 4 assists against Montreal in those 7 games. But he's not just going out there and, you know, trying to pad his stats with secondary assists and not doing anything on the other side of the puck. He's going out there and playing solid defense. So yeah, he does need to be better offensively. I don't think anyone will dispute that, but he's not just making his money for scoring points. He's making his money for his shutdown role in the game as well. And I think as long as he keeps making life hard for Pastrnak and Marchand and really does whatever he can to keep Boston's top guns off the board, I think it'll be worth it. I don't care if he puts up 4 or 5 points in the series if the Leafs advance, and it's because Marner was playing D, and not literally playing D, but, and it was because Marner was playing a shutdown game that played into having Boston's top guys off the score sheet. So yeah, it's not ideal. You want him to be on the score sheet a little more, but as long as the Leafs are winning games and he's doing his job on at least one side of the puck, it's okay.
You brought up that great point about him being able to play that shutdown defense. I mean, you look back to last season when Matthews and Marner, I think it was, you know, tasked with shutting down that Stamkos line against Tampa Bay. If it wasn't Stamkos, it was either Stamkos or the point line. And, or I can't remember what the lines were in that series, but Matthews and Marner both, or Marner himself, both did that job. And Marner got the production, feeding Matthews for a lot of key timely goals, but also playing smart defensively and keeping them off the score sheet as well. So he can do it. He can play both sides. And if he's able to generate that offense as well, look out, because as we said before, when he's on the top of his game, he can do a lot of damage when he's on both sides of the puck.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to remember too, we're talking about, I guess you can call him a scribe that likes to sensationalize his takes and his opinions and make it into journalism, and really does not take the journalistic approach of finding real evidence in supporting that opinion. So when you look back at what Marner's done for this team, there's a reason why this guy hasn't gotten to 100 points. A lot of the times he's playing, you know, he's playing the penalty kill. He's out there in key moments, as you mentioned, Alex. There's going to be moments where he, you know, like he needs to be able to be on the ice and not an offensive role. And that's going to change the outcome of games from a different defensive aspect rather than being a McDavid type guy where he's going to score, you know, five assists in a game. That's not the Mitch Marner that we know. The Mitch Marner we know now at the NHL level is a guy that plays a 200 foot game. So I think that's an important take as well. And I mean, always look at the byline, because if you've read Steve Simmons in the past, you know exactly where he's going with it. And you know that there has been previous incidents. I'll shout out Phil Kessel here, where he hasn't had the story straight and it's based purely on opinion. So we'll leave from that. But talking about a guy who has been invisible in this series is William Nylander. And there's been a lot of speculation, guys, on where this has come from, what's going on there. And if anybody's
watching, he agrees with Willie too.
If anybody's watching, they know exactly why we're giggling here. But anyways, yes, William Nylander has been invisible. He skated the last 2 days. He's a possibility to go tonight, but things have kind of pointed towards not. No, I mean, he was skating out with Noah Gregor at the end of morning skate as well. Alex, any insight, any takes on what's going on with Willie?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a really weird situation, and it's one that I've kind of avoided giving my take on just because they've been so tight-lipped about everything. It's almost impossible to figure out what exactly is wrong with him. And you know, you just feel kind of stupid speculating on it because really nobody knows. I mean, the way that his teammates have been talking about him makes it sound like he's in the hospital. I think Jake McCabe was like, he's in good spirits last time I saw him, which is something you only say if you're visiting someone in the hospital. So yeah, it's weird. And I have no idea what to make of it. I will say that based on my completely unwarranted and unqualified fan opinion on how a player looks health-wise, those videos that are being posted of him skating around a warm-up, he looks stiff as a board, man. And I don't know, like I know there was a quote earlier today from Callie Yarncrook saying that William Nylander looked great at practice. So I'm going to take Yarncrook's word over mine from a 15-second video, but I'm just going to say that I hope they're not trying to rush him back. I understand that for the playoffs, everybody knows that guys play through injuries in the playoffs. And I understand that if there's any time to do that, it's right now. But I do not want to have a 50% William Nylander in there who's shying away from contact and, you know, second guessing his passes. Because for a guy like Nylander, who's not physical to begin with, when you're trying to avoid hurting yourself further, it messes with your strengths. And it messes with, you know, your vision. Like, I know that people love to get on Nylander for shying away from contact and whatnot. It's only going to be worse if he's out there trying not to get injured. So I just hope that if they are planning on getting him into the lineup, he's at a point where he can be a legitimate contributor. Because if he's out there and he's going to be, you know, second guessing passes that he makes and breakout passes and, you know, scanning the ice and, you know, anticipating contact before deciding to make a play, things like that, I'd rather have someone like Robertson in the lineup who's at least 100% and will not shy away from any of that. So I think as long as if he is good to go and he can play at a level of where he's not going to be letting that affect his strengths, then by all means get him back in. But aside from that, I don't know. It's a weird situation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's a part of me that wonders how much of this is, you know, if he gets back into the lineup, we don't want the opposition knowing exactly what's going on with him. And maybe it'll come out after the playoffs are done, what exactly he was dealing with this entire time. That said, there was some speculation that it could possibly be a head injury as well. I know that came out. I forget where I read that, but it was on X this morning. I'd have to look at who. Here I am not taking my own advice. I should look at who the person tweeting it was. But Peter, your thoughts on Nylander, this whole situation, what's going on with the Maple Leafs and their secrecy?
kind of like what Alex said. I mean, they're doing a damn good job of like covering everything up, or like not to let anything leak, because let's face it, you want to keep everything tight-lipped in the postseason. You don't want to give your opponent any incentive that if they return back, you know, not necessarily make them an easy target, but if they try and like, let's say if it was like a wrist injury, they'll be hacking away at his wrist. And then that's going to be like, you know, a major issue for, you know, Nylander, for the team. And then, you know, there's going to probably be something out there where you don't know what's going to happen. But I do think that keeping things tight-lipped about one of your star players, I think that kind of plays into the whole, not necessarily mind games, but, you know, that level of uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen. And the fact that he was taking line rushes kind of showed that, yeah, he looks like he's going to be back. But then when he's still practicing with the scratches, that still gives some doubt as to whether or not he can play. Obviously, you would love to have William Nylander in the lineup, because you saw what he was able to do this season, almost cracked the 100-point mark, got paid as a result, kind of went quiet down the stretch. I know a lot of fans are really disappointed with that, but you know what? If he was saving everything for the postseason, so be it. I'd rather have like Nylander at 110 and 120% than even just Nylander at 100% at this point, because whether it is a speculated head injury, because you wouldn't keep him out this long if there wasn't anything too severe. So I think maybe they're being a little bit extra cautious, maybe because it is that, or it is something else. We don't know. It's been undisclosed for some time. But if he's able to come back, that's a big, big add for the Maple Leafs because of what he's able to do in big moments in the playoffs where he scored key goals. And now, not only that, do you have to worry about Matthews and Marner on two separate lines, you have to worry about William Nylander on a separate line right now. And that third line, if it is Cali Yarncroak, Pontus Holmberg, William Nylander, or even let's throw in Nick Robertson in there, whether he's going to be in there for Nylander or not, that third line has been pretty effective in generating offense opportunities and being quick in transition, because all three of those players are pretty quick. And if you add Nylander to the fold under that third line, that's going to be a big addition, because that just makes him a little bit more lethal. But I mean, I hope he plays tonight. It would be great. But if he's still dealing with something, you don't want to rush it, whatever's ailing him. That's the main thing. And even in the postseason, you don't want to risk that.
No, absolutely. Quickly jumping back to Marner, Cody said, I think Marner will have a better offensive game tonight with Keith having the last, he means change, last change. Yeah. I mean, potentially, again, like I said before, I don't think it doesn't need to be strictly offense from Marner. That's why you have other big guns in the lineup. That said, it'd be nice to see him get maybe a 2 or 3 point game, get the Leafs up 2-1 going into game four. I think it'd be a good effort from him, and it boosts a little bit of confidence as well when it comes to him. Boys, before we get into anything further, just a quick word from our DraftKings Sportsbook sponsor. The chase for the Stanley Cup is on, and if you're looking to light the lamp, nothing beats the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of playoff beards all the way till hoisting of the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. In fact, I have 3 futures out on Stanley Cup winners: the Rangers, the Avalanche, as well as the Carolina Hurricanes. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/ice for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. Boys, heading into game 3 here, we got to talk about what the Leafs need to do to get a win. Keys to victory. Let's each give a couple keys to victory here if we can. Peter, I'll throw it to you first. What did the Leafs need to do to knock off the Bruins in game three?
Continue to stay out of the box. I mean, that I think that's a given right there. I mean, they were a little bit more disciplined in that game, kind of got away from them towards the end of the period or towards the end of the game in the third. I know there was that whole melee ensuing. Labushkin took a bad penalty, Burt, whatever. You don't want to give them any more incentive to come back into this series as they do, because they can't hurt you on the power play. We've seen that. I think they're like 3-for-7 in the first two games. That is going to be a problem if you give them any more power play opportunities. Second, it's to set the tone early, kind of like what they did in the first two games. You know, Toronto set the tone early in game one where they had those chances. Same thing in game two where they had a quicker start and they were a little bit more, you know, energized compared to what happened in game one. I think those are the main two keys going forward, and, you know, build off the home crowd, because obviously that momentum with that win coming over into game three, it's going to be huge now that they're on their side. And the fact that you took one of two there is a big win in itself. Now you want to get another one here and another one on Saturday and take advantage and try to put a stranglehold on the series as quick as possible, because you know what? The demons still remain. You know, you want to end this as soon as possible. So those are my keys to this game.
Alex, what do you think the Leafs need to do to get it done against the Bruins in game three?
I'm going to give two keys to the game, and I wouldn't say they're any more or less important than Peter's. I just want to be different, so I'm going to throw in two different ones. I think just stick to their game. You know, I think we saw in game one that they were a little too focused on just trying to out-hit the Bruins and trying to prove to them that they're the tougher team or they can be tough, whatever it was. And they took a lot of stupid penalties, and we saw what happened. It ended up losing them the game. They were a lot more disciplined in game two, and their penalty kill when they were called upon was better. So I think that they're going to have to stick to their game. And on top of that, I kind of alluded to it there, they need to win the special teams battle. I'm not saying that their penalty kill has to be perfect or their power play has to be perfect, but they have to beat the Bruins on one of those, because Toronto is a team that we know is built for high octane offense. They're not a shutdown team. They're not a team that's built around, I know they've added, you know, shutdown defensemen and guys that are physical in front of the net to try and like change the identity of that defensive core, but they still need to come out and play to their strengths, which is high octane skill, passing, shooting, putting pucks in the net. And to do that, you need to have a strong power play. So more than anything, I think the power play needs to show up tonight, because it's great that they're good at scoring 5-on-5 goals, but they shouldn't be relying on those 5-on-5 goals to carry them throughout the series. So those two would be mine.
Absolutely. I'm going to go with three key players that need to have big games for the Leafs to get it done. Obviously, Mitch Marner is going to be number one. I think he needs to come out, have a big game. Like I've said all episode, I think a big two primary assist game would be huge for him. It would be huge for his confidence. I think Joel Edmondson needs to have a big game. He played 9 minutes in that third period in game two. He played more minutes. The only players that had more minutes than him were Morgan Rielly. I'm double dutying here, boys.
It's okay. Hey, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. It's okay.
Yeah. Morgan Rielly and Austin Matthews were the only two players with more ice time than Joel Edmondson. They went out and got this guy at the deadline for a reason. Now's the time to play him. Now's the time to utilize him. He's a stay-at-home physical guy. He's going to break down the Bruins. He's the guy that you want to put right in Marchand's face. And then I think the third player that needs to have a big game is the Toronto crowd. This is a crowd that has been mocked and made fun of for years upon years upon years. And not just for the 1967, not just for the, it was 4-1, but because the corporate seating at the lower level has been the ghosts, the platinum ghosts of Air Canada Center, Scotiabank Arena, whatever you want to call it. This is a big game for the Leafs. These next two are must wins in my eyes for the Leafs to get out of this first round unscathed. The crowd needs to be in it, and it needs to be a big game from the home crowd They need to take advantage. They need to get some of those guys that are paying the $500 for tickets. They need to get them down to that lower bowl, and they need to be right up against the glass and into the game. I think that's going to drive the play of the Leafs, and I think it's going to be huge tonight if they can get game three won. So that's my three takeaways. Quick YouTube comment here. I remember hearing the concern with Toronto was the forecheck against the Bruins was always an issue, but looks like they kind of figured it out in game two. Missed. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part in game two, they did figure it out. Part of that is the physicality of the offensive players now for the Leafs. They're rolling four straight lines. They've got a fourth line, which Peter, I know we wanted to talk about a little bit. So why don't you take it away with the fourth line and what the Leafs are able to do rolling four lines now?
Yeah, for years, we've always talked about like how the Maple Leafs haven't had a fourth line identity. You know, we try to be very tough. We try to be physical. We try to be in your face. We try to have that speed element. So far, it didn't work. But now it seems like we have that balance. And down the stretch, Connor Dewar, David Kampf, and Ryan Reeves were actually pretty decent. And I think that solidified – that was one line that you couldn't split up heading into the postseason. And when you look at their numbers deeper right now, 5-on-5 – it's just absolutely phenomenal. They're probably the best line out there for the Maple Leafs. I know everyone's going to say, well, that's not good. But in a way, it kind of is because they're the ones that set the tone. And usually those fourth liners are the ones that grind it out and you want to build momentum off them. They're the momentum builders and they have a 67.86 shot attempts for. Their goals for 50%, one for, one against. But expected goals, they're at 71%. Scoring chances, 70%. High danger chances, 75%. They are doing damage in the offensive zone right now. And obviously, you're not going to get a whole lot of offense from them. You're going to get those chances. But the fact that we have a competitive fourth line right now and the fact that they've clicked and for all the criticism that David Kampf got at the beginning of the season, Ryan Reeves has, they found their game. They stepped it up when it mattered most and when the team needs them most. And adding Dewar into that equation on the penalty kill and with his speed, having that ability to get in on the forecheck, I think is a big addition as well. I think that was a very underrated move at the deadline, and it's looking like it right now. So big move or big opportunity for them to kind of continue that going forward, because if I had to choose a fourth line to put out between Toronto and Boston, I'm for sure going for Toronto's right now because they've had the edge over Boston.
Yeah, before we get to our last couple points here, Alex, anything you wanted to say on the Leafs rotating that fourth line?
No, I think the fourth line is looking good. And if you told me at the start of the year that the Leafs were going to have a fourth line with both Kampf and Reeves on it, I probably would have said they're going to go out in four games. But no, they've proved me wrong. They've played really well together. I've really liked the play of Connor Dewar as well. I think that he's done a lot of little things right. And I think getting a guy like him who is my age, just wanted to flex that out there for you guys. Still pretty young. getting a guy like him who's going to be an RFA at the end of the year and can probably reasonably be brought back for a cheap price, I think is a really tidy bit of work by Brad at the deadline. And yeah, you know, we've gone from teams having this fourth line, it seemed like always used to have one old guy, one tough guy, and one rookie. It's always felt like it was something like Spezza, Simmons, Robertson or something like that. And you're right. It went a long time without having an identity. It seems to have an identity now. So I'm happy that they've able to come to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you, Miss, for the comment on YouTube and for tuning in today. Guys, last point before we throw a little prospect talk at you, but Jim Montgomery, obviously we mentioned off the top of the show, not a huge fan of staying an extra day in Toronto. Believes that takes away from their home ice advantage, albeit you're not actually playing the game, but the players are away from their homes and their families. On top of that, Montgomery did make a comment that Matthews has been the most dangerous player on the ice so far as well. Brad Marchand mentioned that, you know, the Leafs are in it to win it. They want, I believe his quote was, they are playing for keeps. Your thoughts on these comments, your thoughts on Jim Montgomery and his home ice. Is it just playing games or is this something that truly will affect the Boston Bruins? Alex, we'll throw it to you first.
first of all, were we recording or was it before we started recording when I compared Montgomery's comments to my ball hockey team situation? I have a goldfish brain, I told you.
I think we were recording.
I'm not going to go back and do it again. Anyway, I don't have sympathy, Jim Montgomery. I'm sorry you have to spend an extra day in Toronto. That's really tough. I feel bad for you. As if it makes any difference whatsoever.
We'll visit the CN Tower.
He says it like they're playing an extra game in Toronto. Like they just said, no, we're going to play game 5 in Toronto and game 6. Actually, we'll come back to Boston for game 6.
Hey, team event at Ripley's Aquarium.
I was about to say, man. You know, I went to Blue Shark Tank there. What are you complaining about?
Steam Whistle's just down the road.
I went to a Blue Jays game a couple years ago and I saw like, I don't know, man. There were probably like 60 grade 10s. That were at Ripley's Aquarium. Why can't he just do that with the Bruins? Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would have to assume that it's. I don't think it's mind games. I think it's. I mean, obviously. I don't know. I don't really think it's mind games. Like I think a lot of people, will err on the side of that, and I know they're used to it with John Cooper's what he would say in the playoffs last year, and then Paul Maurice eventually. I don't know, man. I feel like when you're being interviewed by the media and being asked about your opponent, what else are you going to say, right? Because if Jim Montgomery comes out and says, or if Brad Marchand, I'll use as an example here, comes out and says, nah, we're not worried about them. We've handled them in the past. It looks really fucking bad if you come out and lose. So, I don't think it's really mind games at all, but I do think that the Leafs should be reading what Montgomery and Marchand are saying about them and be thinking to themselves, yeah, let's go and prove them right. Let's go make them sit on their words here.
Peter, your thoughts on the comments from player and coach so far and the whole idea around home ice advantage.
Yeah, I don't think it's any mind games whatsoever. I think it's just, if there's an issue, just take it up with the NHL and the scheduling. They're the ones that made it. Toronto has no control over it. I mean, I'm just going to leave it at that. As for Marchand's comments, that's got to be high praise. I mean, the fact that they're saying that Toronto's playing for keeps, I mean, shows that this wasn't going to be an easy battle to start with. They know that, like, obviously the Bruins had their number in the regular season. Toronto wants to try and change that. They want to flip the script as much as possible. And, you know, we talked about how John Cooper said that, you know, I've been behind the bench with Matthews and Marner. I will take those players on my team any day. They have the respect. It's now time for them to take that next step. And we talk about how Marner needs to have a big game and take control. Matthews has already taken control. If the star players can take control over the series, then Boston is in trouble because they got no answer for that. That to me is going to be huge. And the fact that Marchand is already saying that shows that the respect is mutual on both sides, despite him at his antics, you know. But you have to take that, but you can't let that get the best of you. You got to go out and play your game no matter what.
Yeah, Harlow's trying to show you a few notes from my phone here. I swear they're podcast notes. But anyways, before we close it out here, boys, the Leafs are obviously getting ready for game 3 tonight. The current Leafs are doing well. They're tied 1-1. They stole home ice advantage from the Bruins in that same conversation.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy how that
everything's
that
going
ties
on.
In. It's full circle right now. But that being said,
someone investigate the Leafs.
That's right. Yeah. Where's Kyle Dubas?
Something fishy's going on. Right.
Kyle Dubas is in Pittsburgh and not made the playoffs. Anyways, there are a couple future Leafs that have also done well in their respective leagues. And obviously, I know all of us talk a little prospects. So Artur Akhtyamov, he's a guy that I've been huge on over the last little bit. Sorry, guys. It's mayhem.
It's all
good.
Dude, you're showing your versatility right now. I honestly don't think
that's fantastic. I applaud you, man. Yeah.
So Artur Akhtyamov, he's a guy that I've been huge on for the last little while. I said to Peter prior to the show here that I can't wait to get him over into North America and see what he can do and see if he can, you know, continue to progress there. He won a championship. Grabionkin won a championship. And I know, Peter, you're high on him. So anything you guys wanted to add about those two respective prospects as we close it out?
I saw Akhtyamov slash someone in the back of the leg, so I'm excited to get into Toronto. That's my contribution.
What? That was like a few years ago, too.
No, it was recently. I think a couple. Game. Yeah, I think a couple really? Years. Yeah, a couple of years ago, it was, I think a couple of years ago, I can't remember if it was a slash.
I know he punched the guy with his blocker.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, he punched the guy with this blocker. That was a couple years ago. This was a slash to the back.
This was a skate by. So the guy, the opposing player skated through the crease. He hacked him right in the back of the leg, full Marshawn style. And in fact, his team went out and scored shorthanded on that penalty kill, and it turned the game around for them. So there you have it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what Akiyamov has done the last two seasons. It was only a matter of time before he makes the way over to North America, and he's going to be a great addition to the Marley system. I think they're going to have that battle with Dennis Hildeby and Akiyamov, which is what we couldn't say in a long time with two homegrown developed goaltenders. That's big. And Nikita Grabjankin, I was a big fan when they selected him. Had him as an underrated prospect coming in. I don't think he's going to be underrated anymore. Second in team scoring this season. His playoff scoring, I think he had like 9 points or 6 points in 22 games. He was more of a factor at the beginning than he was towards the end, but do not let the point total fool you. This guy is a workhorse. And the fact that he has the great hands and the work ethic, I think he's going to be a very solid bottom six addition to this team in the near future. So excited for both of them. Glad that they're championships. And now it's now Ethan Cowan's turn to do the same thing. So, yeah.
There you go. There you go. Well, guys, getting ready for game three, game day episode. It was great to have you guys here today. And anybody who tuned in, we appreciate the comments. Cody, thank you for tuning in as always. For Peter, Alex, myself, and the two little mayhem creators over here that I've got, it's been a hell of an afternoon. Make sure you follow us on all of these social medias down below. I think, I don't know, I'm pointing somewhere here, but it's down on the bottom there. Check us out on YouTube. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. This will hit the streams right away. Actually, I'm going to try and get it up as soon as possible. So you can tune in and get our takes. Guys, before we close it out here, I'm going to give you a pick. I'm sitting hard on this one because I truly think that he's had two pretty good games aside from getting clocked a few times. I think Matthew Nyes tucks tonight. I have this feeling that Matthew Nyes tucks tonight.
Okay.
I like it.
I love it.
It pays good on DraftKings, so make sure you check out DraftKings. You use code THPN. And I know for sure, Peter, you're going to be on with the Hockey Podcast Network tonight, and Kyle to do a live stream. Alex, I know you're going to try and jump on, as am I, to talk a little Leafs content during the game. So be sure to check us out on the Hockey Podcast Network YouTube channel as well. It's been a busy day for Sticks in the Six. It's going to continue to be a busy day as we roll into game three. Outside of that, guys, go Leafs, go.